I began this week's story by speaking to April Hudson, who is homicide victim Bobby Ford's oldest sister. She told me about the frustration she has lived with for the past decade over not knowing who killed her brother. I looked for information about this case, and it really surprised me because I didn't find anything. I mean, there was maybe one article, but there was nothing from the local news or the national news about this case. It's almost as if your brother didn't even exist.
There is only one story on him, and it's from the day it happened. Me and my friend Emily, we did the most searching on everything, but they wrote it off when it's not gotten any better, it's gotten worse, and if it's talking to their people or this and that, it's not important. So that's kind of where we're at. We're just at a dry standstill. I don't even know where to start, actually. I mean, he's a typical kid growing up. I mean, never in a lot of trouble. He was the pick of the litter, let me put it that way. I mean, he was the favorite child and this and that and did no wrong. But growing up, we weren't really close. We were distant. There were different reasons behind certain things. He was a good kid. He was a good guy. He just lost his way a little bit, and he was a party animal and womanizer. We didn't hang out as much. You know, our parents went through some things. I ended up on, you know, we were a separated family. We lost our parents. I was 16 when we lost our parents, so I grew up faster than he did and was on my own. So I wasn't around as much as I should have been. There are people that would know him better outside of the house versus me.
So who's one of the people that would know him much better?
Her name's Emily. She and him were really tight. They went to school together, and she could tell you everything about the boy. So I'm not married. I don't have any children. I became mom. Our mother was killed by our father. That's how we lost our parents. When she was killed and he went to prison, I became mom. So when I lost Bobby, that was like burying my own kid. It took everything out of me. I was living in Evansville. I'd come home from Evansville and I'd just hurt. I'd look. I'd just go anywhere just to see and listen to people talk and hear what they had to say. And finally, I was just like, I can't do it no more. It took everything out of me. It
feels like no matter how much you talk to the people that can do something about it, they don't listen.
You know, when Detective Beavers, when I called to talk with him about the case, and he laughed on the phone, and I asked him, I was like, are you sitting there at your desk laughing over this matter? I was like, I don't find it funny, not at all. He hung up on me. I mean, what do you do then?
They have now, like, a department that does cold cases. I don't think it's necessarily a department that's in operation all the time. They have some detectives, I think, that pull out cold cases and look through them in their free time and try to put fresh eyes on it and see if they can see things that maybe the detectives 10 years ago didn't. I mean, with all the cold cases in Indiana, like me alone, I know of 4 people in my adult life who were murdered that are still unsolved. Like, I can just imagine if I'm one person alone, know 4 people whose murders were unsolved, how many unsolved murders there are in Indianapolis. Like, it's a big task to take on. They need to, like, the people that we lost are just as important as the people up north and the people out east and the people down south. We're all just as important as those people.
Hello, this is Mark. I write a weekly newspaper column about true crime, unsolved homicides, and the paranormal. You can find links to my social media accounts and columns on my website titled themarcabre.com. Welcome to the Catch My Killer podcast, and thank you for listening. Before I get into this week's podcast episode, I would like to ask for your help. I'm looking for listeners to help support the podcast by buying me a cup of coffee. If you would like to help support the podcast, I'm asking that you subscribe to my monthly Crime Coffee Club, which is only $5 per month. If you subscribe, I will share exclusive content with you. To support the podcast, please visit catchmykiller.com and click on the donate link or on the buy me a coffee link. And that's enough with the coffee talk. Now it's time to discuss this week's true crime story, which occurred in Indianapolis, Indiana in 2011. Bobby Glenn Ford was 28 when he died. He was found deceased in his home on April 13, 2011. An unknown killer had entered Bobby's home on that morning and shot him in the head. When police investigated the homicide, they learned that Bobby was growing marijuana in his home. Based on my conversations with family and friends, the Indianapolis Police Department think his death may have been over a drug deal gone bad. However, those close to Bobby don't believe this. They have stated that he was likely murdered by someone close to him for more personal reasons. The family also informed me that they were told that there is a witness. The witness was allegedly in the car with the killer, but this person hasn't cooperated with the investigation. This case is unusual. There is no information about it anywhere. If you do an online search, it's almost as if Bobby Ford never existed. There are no pleas for justice. There's no local media stories or any news videos covering this story. At an early age, Bobby lost his mother to violence. His father murdered her and was sent to prison. Bobby's family and friends don't think that the police have done much of anything to solve this murder and get answers for the family. For this story, I spoke to Bobby's sister, April Hudson, Emily Nixon, and Mike McBride. Emily and Mike were two of Bobby's closest friends. Both loved him and are angry that his homicide isn't solved. Although Bobby may have been involved in some criminal activity, it shouldn't prevent his family from getting justice. Bobby was the father of three and loved by his family and friends. And now on with the story of Bobby Glenn Ford, as told by his sister and two closest friends. After speaking to Bobby's sister, I then spoke to Emily Nixon, who was one of Bobby's closest friends.
We met in grade school. I think he came to where I went to school at in fourth or fifth grade. Didn't really get along as kids. We hung out, but we weren't like really good friends or anything. Then when we became adults, we got a lot closer and he ended up being one of my best friends. He is, I don't even know where to begin. He was everything to me, honestly. He was my best friend. He was just perfect. He was funny and intelligent, wonderful.
Did you and Bobby ever date?
No. It's a weird situation. If I dated somebody he didn't like, it wouldn't last very long. If he dated somebody I didn't like, it wouldn't last very long. But we just knew that we would rather be friends than nothing. You know what I mean? I know he loved me and I know I loved him, but he was so important to me that I would rather have him as my friend forever than my boyfriend for a couple of years.
So tell me about his girlfriend. Were they married?
No. So she was pregnant. She had a baby at the end of December of 2010, I think. But I don't believe they'd been together for that long. Like, I don't think they'd even been together a full year yet. I could be wrong on that, but I don't think they were together for a real long time before she found out she was pregnant.
Did you know her?
After he passed away, I got to know her. She was extremely young compared to the age that we were.
As you probably already know, there's not much information anywhere about Bobby's homicide. From what I understand, he was supposed to have worked with his girlfriend's father on the day that he died. He went to the house and found Bobby dead. What is your understanding of what happened on that day?
From what I understand, her dad and him weren't getting along at the time that he passed away. I don't know 100% what the issue was, but I think it had something to do over her dad owing him money or something like that. But I don't believe he was supposed to work with her dad that day. I think the issue was that they had a babysitter for the day so that he could go to work somewhere, and the babysitter canceled, so he ended up staying home with the baby.
Now, this was his baby that he had with his girlfriend. Is that correct? So Bobby was the father of three kids.
Yes. So at the time he passed away, he had the baby that lived with him and his girlfriend that was 3 months old. And then he had another child with another girl who was two at the time. And then they found out the paternity on another child that I believe was older than two when he passed away. after he passed away that turned out to be his. So when he passed away, he had an idea about the third child, but he only knew for sure that he had two.
When was the last time that you spoke to him before he died?
I want to say probably December or January.
Do you remember your last conversation with him?
Not really. I know his uncle had just passed away, so it was December. He was really close to his uncle. His uncle was mentally handicapped, I believe, from an accident of some sort. And he had just passed away. So I called to check on him, and I was at a position in life where I was like, I had a whole bunch of drama going on. I was living in a different state and everything. So we didn't talk for a long time, but I just wanted to call and let him know that I'd seen what happened and make sure he was okay.
Now, when you last spoke to him, did he have any concerns about his welfare? Was he afraid that maybe someone was trying to harm him, or did he share any types of concerns with you that he possibly could have feared for his life?
Not to me, no. Uh-uh. But I've heard from a couple other people that he made comments like he was. Not necessarily scared for his life, but just done with the whole situation he was in and wanted to get away from it.
From what I understand, when the police investigated his homicide, they found marijuana growing in his house. I'm thinking that the police probably assumed that his death had something to do with the marijuana in his house.
Yes. I think they, from what I understand from the last time I talked to the detective, they know who did it, and it's somebody involved with that whole situation. But they couldn't give names or any of that information out. And they said they had a witness that was in the vehicle when it happened with the person when they drove away after it happened. But when it came down to it, that person wouldn't testify at trial.
Have you figured out this person's identity?
Do I personally know who I think it is?
I mean, do you actually know who he is?
They wouldn't tell me who it was. I have an idea of who it was, a pretty strong idea. And the person I'm thinking, I don't think that person pulled the trigger. I think that person set it up to happen.
So what type of relationship do you think this witness may have had with Bobby? Were they close friends or just acquaintances?
The witness was a friend of his. And from what I understand, they would play video games together a lot. And if it got to be too late, Bobby would just tell the guy to go ahead and stay the night or whatever. But for some reason, the night before, they got done playing video games at like 3 or 4 in the morning, and the guy was trying to leave, and Bobby was like, just stay the night here, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. And the guy was like insistent about having to leave the house. He's like, no, I can't. And there was never a time that they played that late that he didn't just crash on the couch for a few hours until the sun came up and then went home.
But on that particular night, he wanted to leave.
Yeah, he was insistent about getting out of there. Maybe he knew that something was going to happen, but he didn't know what or when, and then just happened to be in the car with somebody the next day when it happened.
And this guy's never been arrested. He's still walking the streets, a free man.
Yep.
Now, why is that?
I have no clue. They said they couldn't, when it came down to the guy signing the paperwork, not a confession, but signing paperwork on basically, I don't want to say snitching because I don't like that word. That he would testify against the person who did it, he refused to sign the paperwork. And they said they couldn't charge him with anything, which to me is bullshit. Because if you're sitting in a car and someone is murdered by the person who's driving the car, obviously you know what happened and you're an accessory, whether you pulled the trigger or not.
So how did you learn about this witness?
The cops told us that there was a witness. And then through deductive reasoning and like talking to other people, and I specifically hung out with this person a couple times, and hearing their side of the story, I just kind of put two and two together.
Would you say that Bobby was probably killed by someone he knew? This wasn't like a random thing where some stranger just walked in and shot him.
No, it wasn't random at all. I don't think necessarily maybe that who pulled the trigger was someone he knew, but the person that was pulling the trigger was hired by someone he knew.
Now, I find it interesting that, like I said earlier, I mean, there's just nothing about this case.
In today's day and age, if there's a murder, you hear about it for a couple days on the news. I remember I had just gotten a new job. I was at orientation for my job, and I couldn't answer my phone. And April was blowing up my phone. And I was like, Jesus Christ, dude, like, take a hit. I can't answer my phone. So being a smart ass, because I'm a smart ass, I was like, I texted her and was like, who died? Not thinking anything of it. And she texted me back with like, I can't talk to you about this over text message. You need to call me.
So this was definitely something that was important enough to where April didn't want to text you about it. She preferred that you call her so she could tell you about this.
Yeah, and shortly after she texted me back, I got another phone call from, it was April's boyfriend's at the time's mother. And she's one of those people that's very stern, naturally. But when she knows that you need like a mothering, she can also be very calming and understanding. She called me and I couldn't answer. I was like, what is going on? So when I got done with orientation and went outside, I called April and she said, Bobby got shot. And I immediately thought it was like, what happened with her? So I was like, oh, okay, well, what hospital is he at? Because when she got shot, she survived. And she's like, he's not at the hospital. I was like, oh, they sent him home already? She's like, no, he's, honey. Like, she was trying to tell me without saying the words. I don't think she could really say the words. I was like, no, he's not. And I hung up on her. Like, I was almost kind of mad. I knew she wasn't playing with me, but it's like it didn't register in my brain. And then I sat down and started smoking a cigarette and went to check my voicemail. And when I checked my voicemail, it was her boyfriend's mom. And it wasn't the like really stern and authoritary voice that she usually has. It was very like quiet and calm. And I was like, oh my God, it's true. Like, it's like somebody took the breath out of my body. I was like, it's got to be true if two people are calling.
What exactly happened? Somebody came in and shot him and then left, and then he had his child was upstairs or something along those lines?
From what I understand, they kicked in the door. He had grabbed a knife or something, I guess, on the way to the door, because they came to the back door, which is leads into a mudroom, and then the mudroom had like two or three steps that go up into the kitchen. But they shot him in the head, pretty much right between the eyes. Like, you could see at the funeral. They did a really good job covering it up, but you could see like a swollen area in his head where they had shot him at.
That must have been a difficult situation to handle. How did his family react to the loss of Bobby?
John, his brother, is very, from what I know of his brother, he's very like calm and collected and logical and rational. So he kind of, even though he, like, you know, he's extremely upset, but he's always the person that kind of like brings calm to the situation. Everybody's freaking out and he's the one that's like, hey, let's take a minute and do this and this and this. Like, he's the calm. His little sister, she was a mess from what I remember. She had two little kids at the time and they were obsessed with Uncle Bobby. So she was like not only devastated for herself, but for her kids, because her kids were still toddlers, I think. In April, I'm closer to April than I am to his other brother and sister, but she's pretty much from that day, like, she's not been the same.
It sounds like it must have been an extremely painful moment for the family losing Bobby. They sound like a really tight-knit family.
They're still really close, like all the brothers and sisters, but they've had, between their immediate family and their extended family, so much violence and trauma that it was kind of almost like, seriously, like, what? When is this shit going to stop for you guys? It's like, it was kind of like a part of them like accepted it because that's just what they were used to. But a part of them was like, I don't know how I'm going to go on. And they lost their mom when I think Bobby and I were 12 or 13. So April would have been 16 or 17 and John would have been 14 or 15. So Annie was in kindergarten and they lost their mom because their dad killed their mom while they were sleeping.
That's a lot of tragedy for one family.
Yeah. And April was pretty much an adult, so I think she kind of went off and did her own thing after a little while. But she always still tried to kind of like mother the younger kids as much as she possibly could.
This case happened 10 years ago, and it doesn't seem like anything has happened on it, and it's definitely not moving anywhere. So what I want to ask you is, why do you think that this case is unsolved after 10 years? What's your opinion?
I think it's a combination of the neighborhood it happened in, the person it happened to, and the people involved. I think when it comes down to it, there's people involved that they don't want to do anything to.
Are you referring to the police?
Yes. Yeah. You know, when April and I were going back and forth talking to detectives and stuff, it was never, didn't seem like they were completely worried about Bobby. It was always something else they wanted answers on. Like, they call and say they want to talk, so you go down there, and then they don't want to talk about Bobby's case. They want to talk about who he might have been getting drugs from, or then they're worried about the drugs. And then another detective comes on and wants to talk to you, and you go up there and he talks to you, and he wants to know which cops are involved. It was never really about solving his case. It was about solving a drug case they've been trying to solve for years that they're never going to solve because the dude is obviously quicker than they are.
Now, is this the kind of neighborhood where if people do know anything, they're probably not going to talk to cops?
Yeah, definitely. I think it would vary from person to person on whether you'd be able to get somebody to talk to the police. Like, I know myself, I'm not going to go out of my way to talk to a police officer in a way other than hello, how are you? But if it's a situation like what happened with Bobby, I'll talk to whoever wants to talk. But like, if I were to see something random in that neighborhood, I wouldn't say shit to anybody. There are too many people in that neighborhood that can find out everything about you. A lot of the time, it's not worth it.
Well, the area where Bobby was killed at is a pretty rough part of Indy.
Yeah, like I just had this conversation with one of my friends the other day that I've lost as many people in my class, in the classes above and below me, from high school to murder and drug overdoses as my parents have lost to natural causes, and they're in their 60s.
It doesn't really surprise me because I grew up in Indianapolis on the east side, and several people were murdered in the neighborhood that I lived in, but that was life in Indianapolis. And if you look at the FBI statistics on crimes, Indianapolis is considered one of the most dangerous cities in America.
Yep.
Well, I mean, I think that what happened is maybe when they found out that he was growing weed and selling it or whatever he was doing with it, the police probably just said, it's just another drug dealer off the streets. And they kind of left it at that because, you know, when people that have a criminal record get killed, or when prostitutes get killed, you know, people like that.
Yeah, they don't have a family or friends or anybody looking for them, so why worry about it?
I think there's parts of Indy, for instance, like the east side, that probably wouldn't get the same attention as, let's say, somebody that was murdered in Muncie or Carmel.
I think a lot of the problem with his case is they have been looking to get the specific person for a very long time. Like, we're talking probably decades at this point. And at some point, this person's name was mentioned, I guess. And when that person's name got mentioned, or they found out that Bobby was as close to this person as he was, it was almost like they were like, what murder? Like, obviously, these people know this dude we've been trying to get for 20 years, so let's get him. But if you type Bobby's name in on Google, you get a video from Wish TV, and then an article from the news, and I think the condolence page from the funeral home. And that's it. It ends after three links on the first page. The rest of it is about Indy 500 stuff.
You know, even if he was a criminal or did criminal acts, he still deserves justice. I mean, he has three kids, and I think that they deserve to know who killed their father.
His family's already been through enough. They deserve to have some kind of closure where he's concerned. They've been put through enough from day one, whether it be like cousins or aunts or brothers or sisters or mothers or fathers. Like, they've been put through enough and they deserve to have some closure on it. I couldn't imagine. I don't think there's another man in this world that I could love as much as I love Bobby Ford, but I couldn't imagine being blood related to him and not knowing what happened. I know how bad I feel. I can just imagine how horrible they feel.
Yeah, that's really tough. I mean, not knowing what happened to him, and it was 10 years ago, so they're still wondering to this day.
He wasn't a mean person. He wasn't a hateful or violent, or he wasn't any of that stuff. So there was really no reason for it, no explanation behind it. You can say with some people, oh, well, that person beat up this person, and then this person shot them in retaliation. It wasn't even like that. Like, there was no reasoning.
Yeah, somebody had a reason, though. And they got away with it, too.
Yep.
So the last question that I would want to ask you is, can you tell me how much the loss of Bobby has affected you and his family today?
Where his family is concerned, I know that like his sister's aunt Annie has had another baby since he passed away. His brother John's been through a lot since he passed away. April's been through a lot since he passed away. And I know that that's all stuff that they just always assumed he'd be here for. So I'm sure it's very like gut-wrenching at times to think about it. And I'm sure that things have changed, like where holidays are concerned and stuff, because he's not here anymore. They don't necessarily get to see his kids as often as they normally would because he's gone. They see his middle child a lot, but they haven't seen his youngest in probably 7 or 8 years, and only see his oldest once in a blue moon. And that it wouldn't be like that if he were here. Like they would see those kids all the time. Where I'm concerned, I always kind of assumed he'd be here too. Like I never thought something bad would happen to him. And I never thought I had a time limit on how long I had with him. I didn't get a chance to do or say what I wanted in the long run. But other than that, there are things I specifically wanted him here for. Like when I had a child, and there are a lot of times, she's almost three, my daughter. There are a lot of times that I'm just like, I can't believe he's not here. It breaks my heart, A, that he's not here, because I know he'd be head over heels in love with her. And B, that she doesn't have him in her life, because she doesn't have a male influence other than my father. I know he'd worship the ground she walks on, and she deserves that. And it breaks my heart that he's not here for that.
And what would it mean to you if the police arrested his killer?
I'd sleep better, I think. When somebody passes away, you have a hole in your heart, and then you process that best, and you go through a grieving process, and the hole closes a little bit. This whole, like, it just gets bigger and bigger, because there's never anything to help close it.
And for the conclusion of this story, I spoke to Bobby's friend, Mike McBride.
I met Bobby when I was about 12 years old, and he's 6 years older than I am, so he was right at 18 when I first met him through a friend, and ever since then, we just clicked and hung out because he knew my father, so he tried to keep me in line and make sure I was doing the right thing in life, and you know, find too much of a better guy once I got old enough to where I was allowed to hang out with him. He ended up living with me for 5 years. He'd give you the shirt off his back. Bobby didn't have a bunch of money back then when I first met him. He didn't have nothing. But I'd buy stuff for him all the time, and he'd get his last $20 and he'd hand it to me, you know, and I'd say, Bobby, you're going to need that. And he'd say, you buy me stuff all the time. You don't want to buy me something again, just take the money. I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. Awesome dude. Loved his kids, took care of his kids, and that's when he met his girlfriend.
So you and Bobby both grew up together in Indianapolis, correct?
Yep. He's 21st and Emerson. On Leland, actually, it's one street east of Emerson. We grew up in the same neighborhood. It was 4th Street. But basically, everybody in the neighborhood was pretty well tight together. We all stuck together. My parents' house was the like hangout house. So everybody came to my house. I didn't really go hang out at their houses. We had an above ground pool. So everybody came and swim and hung out. My dad loved to cook. He cooked for the whole neighborhood. He was like a father figure for the whole neighborhood. And Bobby was one that was there with us the whole time, from 12 all the way up till we lost him.
What was Bobby's profession? What did he do for a living?
He did a lot of painting with me. My father owned a painting company, so he did a lot of painting with us. We also worked in the union for almost 5 years, the painters union. And we got on with a guy named Brian Wilson. He ran BMAC Wireless, which he contracted off AT&T and done cell phone towers. So me and Bobby would travel around and do cell phone towers. And then we left that job and he got a job doing street sweeping, which was my uncle's company. Me and him together driving sweeper trucks for probably 4 years. That's when he was a little bit older.
What were Bobby's future aspirations? What did he want to do with his life?
He just wanted to make sure his kids was taken care of. That's all Bobby really cared about. He wanted to make it the next tax bracket and become a better person money financially wise, but you know, we're all fighting to do that. So, but he just wanted to, let's see, career wise, he wanted to travel the world. I know that So I know that ain't really a career, but that's what he wanted to do. I'd go fish everywhere. That'd be amazing. We'd fish in one day here. Bobby didn't really fish too much before he met us. My dad was a real big fisher, and I fished a lot. We do a lot of bass fishing. And Bobby set the hook on a fish one day, and instead of reeling the fish in with the reel, he decided to walk backwards and go up the hill. And we're like, Bobby, where are you going? He's like, I'm getting the fish in. I'm like, you got to ride and reel. You don't have to walk backwards to get the fish in. So he literally wasn't reeling, just walking backwards to get the fish in on the bank. And he finally got it in. And his smile, man, just from catching that. It was like a 3-pound bass, nothing huge, but to him, it was everything.
So did things change between you guys when he got with his girlfriend and he had his kid? Did that change your relationship? I'm guessing that you probably didn't see him as much anymore.
No, I did not, because me and Bobby did a lot of running around together. We was with each other 24/7. He lived in my house. The only thing he would do in the mornings, he'd get up and go to his aunt's house, and he would take a shower and come right back. I don't know why he didn't want to shower at our house, but he was with me 24/7. But we did a lot of running around and talking to women and, you know, the crazy young stages and being wild and having fun. And then he met his girlfriend at a traffic court, actually, and he moved in with her. And I remember this day telling him, like, what are you doing? Are we done running around and having fun? And he said, man, I think I love her, Mike. I said, all right, well, guess it's time for us to settle down then and grow up. We parted ways a little bit just from taking care of our own families. It wasn't like a bad term thing or nothing. We didn't split up on nothing like that. I didn't talk to him for probably 6 months or so. And then we'd call, and of course we'd call and talk to each other. You know, we just didn't see each other every single day. Like, basically about how that went down before he passed away. I talked to him probably 2 weeks before that happened to me.
So how did you find out that he had passed away?
I got a call from a buddy that lived across the street from my parents' house, Brad. That was the first one to see his father. Him and Brad and Harry were the first ones there. And they called and said, Bobby's been shot. So I rushed over there. 2 weeks prior to him passing away, he told me that his girlfriend at the time was messing with somebody he was making money with. Bobby said he had $40,000 saved up. He was ready to make sure his kids had a good life, and he didn't want to keep dealing with the problems that was going on with her. So I said, Bobby, just make sure it's what you want to do. Taking kids from a woman is going to be tough. And it's a woman's state here, so, and yeah, I'm sure you don't want to take your kids from their mother. And that's basically how that went down. And I never knew this was coming, of course, or I would have told him a lot more than I did. I wasn't with him every single day, so I didn't know exactly what he was. I know what he was doing, of course. Everybody does. They found what they found inside the house. But we had another buddy that was close to both of us that I didn't really get along with too much anymore. And he hung around Bobby quite a bit, and he would tell me stuff about Bobby, and he was inviting random people in the house that he didn't really know, and he was kind of nervous when he was over there because there was a lot of money out. And so I'd call Bobby and try to talk to him, and he wouldn't answer the phone, and he'd call me back, and I knew it because I was at work. It just seemed like something inside his circle was bothering him more than anything. It don't seem like it was a random thing to me. He was a good guy. He didn't have a attitude with nobody. He wasn't no shit starter. He didn't rob people or do nothing crazy. They have no problem for somebody to come do that to him. He stuck to himself, stayed in his house. And I believe he was working with his girlfriend's father at the time, if I remember right. It's been so long. But I believe that's where he was supposed to be that morning, was supposed to be going to work with him. He was supposed to be at work with him that morning. So why he wasn't already there that morning is kind of what throws me for a loop. And why was she gone? She was at work, but I don't know if you heard the story about her leaving work too early to go get shoes for a funeral, and nobody had even known he was dead yet. So how does she know that she needs shoes for a funeral when you haven't told anybody about Bobby's death? Did she know about it before? Because to me, if you left and went to work, you should know your spouse is dead on the kitchen floor unless you know what happened. The police called her on scene. That day when we were there, the detective called her on scene, and she answered the phone, and she said, I'm busy out shoe shopping right now, and hung the phone up. That threw me for a loop, because to me, if you're trying to be questioned, then I don't understand why they didn't go pick her up. They should have issued a warrant right then and there if she's trying to hide from the cops and don't want to talk to them about it. Like, I know if my wife died in the kitchen, I'd be there in a heartbeat to talk to the police, but to find out what happened. Wouldn't be worried about going shoe shopping, you know? or hanging up on the detective. That wouldn't have happened. So she lived there. I know that for 100% fact from the day, because they lived at 21st and Leland, and another buddy of ours' house is our house right there at 21st and Leland, the same neighborhood we all grew up in. And they lived there for a while until they moved into that house where he got killed at. She lived there with him from day one to the day he got killed. And that's another thing that threw us through a loop. I don't know if you read it, said there's no fingerprints in the house. There was no evidence of a woman ever living there. No fingernail polish, no shampoo, no woman's clothing, no none of that. So who knows how to clean a scene good enough to where a cop can't find a fingerprint of his own kids and his wife or his girlfriend at the time that lived in the house.
Where were his kids when this happened?
He has three totals, but he has them at three separate women. So one with two of the kids was with their mothers, and the youngest, Bryce, was upstairs when it happened. And they say in the police report that he was not there, and he was there because her father is who picked him up when he went there to go check on him. That's why he was at the house watching his kid while she was at work, and he was supposed to be going to work with her father, and then all this stuff happened.
So his youngest son was in the house with him when he was killed?
Upstairs, yep.
Now, how old was his baby?
I would say probably 6 months. Not old enough to remember anything or not even to understand what's going on or anything. I mean, Bryce is probably laying upstairs in the crib. Thank God he wasn't old enough to, you know, heard of a gunshot and not understand what it is. He was too young to even understand what that was.
After Bobby died, what did you and all your friends think about his death? Did you all think that his killing was random, or did you think it was something else?
Like I said, I talked to Bobby 2 weeks before he passed, and he told me that him and the owner of the house is where the relationship was. That's where he was making his money. Bobby's not the type of guy to back down from a fight if it occurred. He's not the one to start it. But if somebody was giving him problems, he definitely ain't scared to come approach somebody and ask them what their problem was. And then when she started acting weird and fishy, I was like, maybe she's involved in it some kind of way too, and that made sense with what he was telling me 2 weeks prior to it.
So have you seen the landlord or the girlfriend since Bobby's death?
I actually seen the owner of the house and the girlfriend, of course, at his funeral, and I talked to the owner of the house. He came over and showed me a tattoo that he got of Bobby, and I said, that's kind of funny. I was a little pissed off at the time.
Can you tell me about any progress on this case? I mean, do you know what's going on with it? It seems like nothing's going on with it.
As far as I know, it's a cold case. Like I said, that was like my brother. I was with him every day, so I don't really know what to say about it. I just want justice for this family. I got told to quit messing with the case or I'll be arrested for tampering because I wasn't a part of his family, which is beyond me because you would thank the cops who want you to help find out. I understand not going and pulling up to somebody's house and taking a risk of them killing you as well, you know what I mean, or getting involved that deep, but finding out information shouldn't be a problem. It definitely wasn't no random act. Somebody didn't just rob him or it was a drug deal gone bad. That's not what the hell it was. There ain't no way. Bobby was comfortable. Whoever it was, he left him in the back door. So I don't know. It has to have been somebody he was comfortable with enough to let them in the back door for everything to happen.
He was shot to death. Is that correct?
Shot in his head right above his right eye. And it was close enough to where it was put on his head because there was a little bit of gun residue around his eye. So that's saying it's not from a distance. It wasn't far away. It was like basically point blank. And that's another thing. He was shot with a .380. Now, Tara Ellis is his wife at the time when he got murdered. So the autopsy report goes to her instead of the family because that was closest to kin. He was married to her, even though he wasn't with her. I ended up talking to Tara. She didn't like the family, so she didn't want to give him no information or give him the autopsy report. I acted like I had a girlfriend at the time. I acted like I wanted to talk to Tara and start talking to her. She met me up at All-Star Bowling Alley with the autopsy report. And I had John, his brother, and his sister, Annie, meet me up there. And I gave them a copy of the autopsy report, which I just asked them the other day if they had it, and they said they didn't. So I'm in the process of trying to get the autopsy report where it can show exactly what it, I mean, I know it was a .380 that shot him. Oh, the bullet never left his head. It stayed inside his head. From what I remember, there was a orange powder paint on the bullet. And so when you go to a gun range, after you shoot the gun, the shell casings come out. they take them shell casings and they get all the dents out of them. They spray them with orange powder paint and they repack them and sell them as range bullets. Well, that orange powder paint is where he took his girlfriend to learn how to shoot that 380. When I talked to him 2 weeks before he died, he just bought her a brand new 380 to teach her how to shoot. And that's what killed him, the 380.
Was he killed with his own gun?
We have no clue because the gun wasn't found. So there was no murder weapon found. The only thing they found was the bullet that was lodged inside his head. To know it was a 380 caliber.
So how has the loss of this great friend of yours affected your life? I can tell by the sound of your voice that you're still pretty hurt about the loss of Bobby, even after 10 years.
It affected me a lot. Bobby was my best friend, man. Like I said, I ran with him every day, done a lot with him, had a lot of fun with him, got in a lot of trouble with him, did a lot of fights with him. He knew my mother and my father real well. I lost my father in 2013 as well, 2 years after Bobby, same month. Bobby died April 13th, and my father died April 1st, 2 years later, on April Fool's Day. It's almost like losing, I mean, it hurt just as bad as losing my father, to be honest. I got him tattooed on my arm just as well as my mother and father on my side, so be with me for as long as I can remember. And I raised the girl I was with at the time. I raised her daughter from birth all the way up till we split up, and she was about nine. I was with her for 9 years, and that's what really tore me up. Was Bobby used to come over all the time to play with her, and we always called him Bobbo. I don't know if anybody's ever told you that. Everybody called him Bobbo, and she would always say, like, "Where's Bobbo at?" And I'm like, "You're not coming over today." It's hard to tell a girl that you'll never see him again, you know?
So my final question for you is, for anyone out there listening to this podcast, if they know anything about what happened to Bobby back in 2011, what would you say to that person or persons?
I'd like you to come forward and just somebody tell the truth about what happened. If it was their family, put the cops in their shoes. If it was one of them cops' families, or somebody would have been arrested, you know? Like, I heard there was a guy that was seen driving there that dropped the guy off that did it. And nobody's questioned that guy at all. He ain't been arrested. That's conspiracy to a murder right there. That'll get you 20 years by itself. Why has nobody went and picked that guy up and questioned him? I just feel like everybody should look at it as their family. If it was my family, which it is my family, I'd like to know who did it.
And that concludes the story of Bobby Ford. Who killed Bobby? Why hasn't this case received any attention from the local media? Do you know who killed this young man? If you know anything, his family is requesting that you call in a tip and help them get justice. Bobby has 3 children that deserve answers. If you would like to know more about his story, please visit the Justice for Bobby Ford Facebook page. And if you know anything about this homicide, you can report an anonymous tip to Crime Stoppers at 317-262-TIPS. And if you are a parent, law enforcement official, friend, or relative seeking justice for an unsolved homicide case, please visit my website and complete the contact form, or contact me through Facebook. Thank you for listening.